everybody feels that they have to cover, to pretend, to do something else, so people will never know what they feel, what they know, what the situation in their home, business, soul. Okay, so, but when did it started? How come that a woman or a man that grew up in a different culture than I did, that studied something else in the university, that looked different than me, how come he feel the same? What is this? What is this? It's like an operating system that the whole humanity around it, how come? And then I developed a theory. You are afraid only when you think that someone else will see it. If you want to do something in your house and no one, you will never be afraid, like a kid.
Hello and welcome to Curious Ones podcast by Yandara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, the host of the podcast, a yoga and meditation teacher and philosophy lover. Each week you will hear eye-opening interviews with the different teachers of the Yandara Yoga Institute, located in beautiful Baja, Mexico, along with other teachers that pass through here. This life-changing knowledge shared through authentic, heartfelt communication will help you live a happier, more fulfilled, and connected life. Let's dive in. Hello, welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Yandara. I'm Yael Ginsberg, and today I have the incredible Sigal Avitan.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Sigal is an executive strategist, an entrepreneur, author, filmmaker, and behind her back, people call her a shame surgeon. So, first of all, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for doing this, Sigal.
Thank you.
And let's dive in. I mean, we have to acknowledge what has happening right now in the world. The people listening to the podcast already know that I'm Israeli. Everybody in the world knows there's a war going on in Israel right now.
We're in Tel Aviv now.
We're in Tel Aviv, which is more safe than other places in Israel.
I don't feel safe.
Yeah.
I don't feel safe, even though I'm in Tel Aviv. And, you know, people say that the war is only around Gaza and in the north. But I think that after what we had in October 7th, you can't feel safe anywhere, even not in my home. I don't feel safe.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're talking about. And yeah, I wouldn't say that I feel safe. That's not exactly the word I would use. And actually, maybe this is the biggest thing that we're dealing with, the biggest fear, our safety, our basic safety of being in our home has been taken away.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest challenges that we're dealing with.
Yeah. And we both have friends, you know, all over the world. And I think that every Jew, it doesn't matter if it's in France or London, LA, I don't know, whatever, Denmark, no one feels safe. You know, it's like the anti-Semitism, it's raised its head, and I'm really surprised. You know, I read about it so much that there is, you know, some haters there and small groups, but I didn't know that it's such a big thing. Mm-hmm. I think we all surprised from this, and yeah,
definitely me too. I mean, what we see now around the world. This is not exactly the topic of our conversation today, but we have to speak about it, because what we're seeing today is beyond surprising. It's appalling.
Yeah.
It's something that I never expected to see. The huge rallies, not about
you know, claiming to be pro-Palestinian, but actually hating Jewish people.
It's not pro-Palestinian. It's hating Jewish people.
Mamash, yeah. Really?
Mamash, yes. Mamash is really in English. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And this is kind of... I met Sigal a few months ago and I already admired her immediately when I met her. And then I learned about her work and then I admired her more. Mm-hmm. And then when this whole situation happened, I completely put aside all the episodes of the podcast that I already recorded. And I feel that us as a world, as humanity, have to talk and understand what's happening right now. Because maybe it's happening in our little part of the world, which is very, very little. But
it's like a microcosmos.
Exactly. But all over the world, people are talking about it, protesting about it, all over the news, all over social media. It seems that our little small country has been affecting the whole world. And Sigal does research on shame and what people say about us, our public image. She works also with executives and celebrities and many people who work a lot with public image or have to take that into account.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be interesting to speak about what's happening now from this perspective. Because especially, let's say for me,
I'm curious, why do you think that shame impacts this whole situation? I have an answer, but I'm curious what you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Because I see now that in Israel, we're not just dealing with the actual combat and battle that's happening. That's, for me, like one of the things that we're dealing with. But another huge thing that we're dealing with is the public image of Israel around the world, of having a legitimacy to protect ourselves. And that seems to be in question.
And it's more than that. I think that we feel embarrassed that they cut us like this because we are like a really strong brand. Our intelligence is the more, I think, is the strongest and the smartest in the whole world. Everybody wants to learn from us. And suddenly, we have nothing. So I speak with people around the world and they say, what did you do? What did you do to us? We always were so proud to say we are Jewish, we have friends and family from Israel. Israel is me. And me is Israel, you know, we reflect each other. And suddenly we were so weak. So people deal with embarrassment and shame around this mm-hmm. war.
But what do you think is the source of the embarrassment?
We always, when we have a really huge thing to deal with, we start thinking about how it looks from outside. And only after we cover it all, we stop and say, okay, something is wrong inside us. Let's take care of this instead of our image. And I think that Israel, for the last 20 years, deal with the image and how progressive we are instead of doing the right things for us, for our safety in this country, for our kids, for our families. We broke it only for our image.
Wow. Well, could you speak more about that?
You know, we are a startup nation, okay? There are a lot of investors from all over the world that come to Israel. I think that this great industry and all the great things that we made since, you know, the internet generation, I think that the head of this industry made their impact on a lot of decisions, crucial decisions, because if you want to have investors here, you don't want them to see that you have combats here and that you, I don't want to use, you know, those damaging words about the Palestinians, and I don't want to go to you know, politics, you know, conversations, because it's not right, and you're a yoga mentor and you think that everybody has to hug each other and to love each other.
You do.
So I want really to keep it very simple, really simple. And I think that because we wanted to show the world that it's very good to make business with us, and it's quiet and peaceful, and we have parties, and we have restaurants, and we have great, you know, nightclubs and everything, and of course about our universities and research and beautiful women. We showed all the shining things. We didn't want to take all the ugly things out there. So maybe if they will see what's happening here for real, they will want to, you know, make business with us.
Which is not wrong.
No?
I think...
Even after October 7th?
I mean, it's not wrong to think that if external investors know what's actually happening here, they might actually not want to do business with us. Because let's say, I can just say, I'm not really in the business world, but I can say from knowing people from other countries, and always they ask me, like, do you feel safe in Israel?
No, you don't. This is reality. Welcome to reality. You know, you can cover it, and then you have a monster in front of your face. Mm-hmm. Because secrets, you know, but the end of every secret, big, small, at the end it will expose, you know, and in our country, we surrounded with so many, again, I don't want to use with you the word enemy, but so many of them that don't want us here. Mm-hmm. So you covered it and you polished it and you make it as if it's like a big lie. Mm-hmm. And the government served this fiasco for so many years with weak tools and this is the big embarrassment. The big embarrassment is not that what the whole world sees. The big embarrassment that we covered it for interests, for our image,
wow,
for looking like we are progressive and liberal.
Wow. I think maybe one could hear from the undertone of the words the big disapproval of many people in the Israeli society of the leadership. Very big. It's not even enough to explain how big. Which this upsets me also, because they're supposed to represent me and us, and they don't. And they definitely brought the situation to be. And it's interesting to think of it from this perspective, that they were trying to make this image, you know, like this, you know how you say that a man with a really fancy car is just, yeah, covering up a broken ego?
Yes. It's the same.
Like that, yeah.
But I can't put it only on the government, because, you know, it's complicated. If you want to look at the big picture, so the government doesn't come alone. You have the business people that, you know, the head of the the economy in Israel, I think that they have a big, huge influence on the government. Of course, that the prime minister have to take the whole responsibility because it was in his shift. So it's his responsibility, but you have a lot more influence points and people that you can't take from them their responsibility. That's what I think.
I completely agree. I want to take this issue, but also speak in a way that people can learn from this for their own lives, right? Because a lot of people are not from Israel and they hear what's happening, but I want this to be relevant to people also in their own lives, not dealing with governments and wars and all these things, which I hope you never have to deal with. But we see this also in our own lives, how when we try to make an image of everything's perfect, but actually everything's falling apart behind the scenes, how we end up making it worse. Yes. Maybe you can speak about that.
I think that you know that most of us, you know, walking with a mask on our faces. And when I started researching this issue about what other people, how it impacts everyone, what other people think about us and shame and the fear of criticism. It was when I had a startup, what you call Zoom today. I made it, I started it in 2006. And after 3 years, I knew, and my financial advisors knew that it's too early. No one understood what I do. People ask me, why do I have to make a meeting through the internet with a computer, with a screen, when I can take a plane and go to meet someone or take my car and go to, you know, the meeting room in his office, or he'll take his car and come to my meeting. Why we need it? I need to feel my partner to close the deal, you know. But I understand after 3 years, I think that I lost a lot of money. I understood that it's too early for everyone. And, you know, God has his plans, and COVID forced us to use this Zoom and everything. So I lost a lot of money, millions. And in one moment, in a private party in my family, I heard that word. I felt that no one knows that in my my parents' friends, I understood that my parents covered it and ashamed that I was divorced, okay? And I was in shock, because in the house, I said, I want to get divorced. Okay, what do you need from us? And that's it. And in that party, I heard, no one told me that, but I could feel it. So I asked my aunt, tell me, Miriam, her name, no one knows that I'm divorced. Where do you think my husband is when I come to Shabbat and to holidays? And she said, Shuma, Sigal, you know how respectable your parents are. When I hear that word, Shuma, that enigmatic word,
what does it mean?
It means, in a Moroccan language, it means shame. But it's not only shame and embarrassment and what other people say. It's nobility. It's to stay humble. That's the reason that it confused so many people. Because if you have chshuma, if you have this thing, so you are a good person. You think about other people. You want them to feel great. You want them to feel comfortable. But if you don't, you know, put the point where the boundary has to be between your life and your interest to other people's interest, you lose your life. You lose your truth. And that was the day that I said to myself, okay, that's the reason I'm not closing my startup.
Wow.
That's the reason I'm still losing money and tell the whole world that business as usual, and the day after that, all my life changed.
What changed?
I closed the business. I unfortunately told all my employees to go home and look, you know, for their next position. And I had a really, really beautiful office, you know, and cars and everything. And I went home. And the first thing I did is to go to study documentary filming, because I wanted to know if this thing is only my disease, only my problem, only my family, you know, Moroccan family, religious, from a small town, or maybe, just maybe, other people suffering from that. And what I discovered was huge.
What did you discover?
Ooh, what I discovered. I took a camera and I met women that don't eat in front, you know, public, don't eat because they're ashamed. Woman that has been abused from, you know, her husband for many years, and she's not complaining, not because she's afraid of her life or her children's life, only because she's afraid from what other people will say about her. She was ashamed. I met people like me that their business is bleeding to death and they don't close it only because what other people say. And I met someone that sold his house without telling his wife, just, you know, to show everyone that everything is okay and they still have the car and the house and they go with friends to restaurants and what else? Diseases. People don't speak about mental illness in their families. They don't speak about, even, you know, Ronit Alkabetz, the actress, everybody knows her all over. She's really one of a kind. And I think that if you want to describe her, the word freedom is on her head. And suddenly one day I woke up and I opened the radio and I heard that she died. And I asked, how come? When? What happened? And they say that she had a cancer and she didn't want no one to know. And she's really a freestyle person. We have a lot of examples from here, from Israel, but from all over the world. People ashamed almost about everything. Mm-hmm. And then I started, okay, I said to myself, okay, everybody is ashamed. Everybody feels that they have to cover, to pretend, to do something else so people will never know what they feel, what they know, what the situation in their home, business, soul. Okay, so, but when did it started? How come that a woman or a man that grew up in a different culture than I did, that studied something else in the university that looked different than me, how come he feel the same? What is this? Mm-hmm. What is this? It's like an operating system that the whole humanity around it, how come?
Mm-hmm. Wow, interesting.
Yeah, and then I developed a theory.
Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 2 or 300-hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode.
Of course, after I watched people in restaurants, I call it the ketchup theory.
Okay, ketchup theory.
imagine that you have your husband and two small kids, let's say 5 and 6, or, you know, those ages. And you go to a restaurant where there are a lot of people that you don't know, strangers. And one of your kids take the ketchup and cover all the white dress, that the new white dress that your daughter had. What do you think will happen? The father and the mother, or both, will go very close to their kid and say very quiet and respectable way, "What did you do to your sister? Please apologize and go to the restroom and help her to clean up." If the same thing would happen in their home, when no one listen, no one see, the screaming and the ugly words that the kid could hear would be really like something that we regret after we do that, okay? Most of the parents. So you as a kid, you think about your parents, okay, those smart people, strong, smart people that loves me more than anything in the world, okay? I'm the most important thing in their life. If they act differently and they respect me, when other people looking at us, and even though it's on my expense, okay? So what does it say? It says that other people, what they think are more important than I. And this thing you take from your, you know, even before you said your first words as a baby, you always watch your parents and you feel it and you take it with you.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
I feel like our parents also get it from their parents.
Of course.
Right?
Of course. It's like an agreement, a close agreement that we have for generation.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you I know that you understand it, but do you remember something from your childhood that...
I remember, like, the first thing that came up for me when you spoke about this, my father has a mental illness. And I remember that I hid it all the time. Like, I would be experiencing something horrible at home with my family, father, everything. I would go to school and pretend like nothing happened, like I'm the happiest girl in the world. But in reality, I just experienced like the worst thing a child could ever experience. And I just remember the feeling of trying to hide it. And the most I remember the day that I realized that I don't need to hide it.
How old were you?
I was like around, I was a teenager, like 16 or something like that, maybe.
How did you understand that you don't have to hide it?
I understood that my father is not me. That was the difference, like the separation that his actions and who he is are not what define me, because I think as a child, you're so connected to your parents that everything they do, you take on yourself. And, you know, that we speak about this in psychology a lot, about blaming ourselves and things like that. And I feel like that's still somewhere inside of me. But when I consciously realized that what he is doesn't mean anything about me, and also this has been a process.
Do you remember the first person, friend, that you told her, him, about it?
I don't remember the first person, but I definitely remember the difference between hiding it and like my best friends growing up. When I grew up until I was 15, I was in Israel, and then from 15 to 18 in New York. So the girls in Israel that were my friends didn't know anything. But when I moved to New York already, so we kind of had like a physical separation also.
So it was easy for you.
It was easier for me to separate him and me as people. Mm-hmm. But I really remember like hiding it and trying not to show the world. And I remember like if friends would come over, I would always be nervous that he doesn't do something.
Did you invite a lot of friends to your home, or you prefer to go to your friends instead of they come to yours? And after you start to speak about it, you felt like liberated from shame, or you still have it, you know?
Well, I felt that I was liberated from it. But now that I'm doing therapy and I'm like really going deeper into the subconscious beliefs, I'm realizing that in a way I still have this feeling that I need to hide certain things and still like protect an image. But what I realize is that I'm protecting an image as if what I'm showing is what people are going to like, but actually what's happening is the opposite.
Of course.
Maybe you can speak about that.
The reason I take people, all of my clients, I use shame to heal them from shame. The reason I take all of them to the front stage is first of all to make it quick, because you know you lost so many years as a free person, you know, you can choose whatever you want, you can live, and you give it to someone else to decide for you. And that someone else, you know, he have things in his life and he needs permission for other person. So we just put it on other people that doesn't, you know, they don't care about what we think, what we feel, if we're strong, if we're rich, if you, okay. So it's, you know, the first thing that I need to heal people, to help people, to take it out from their life, from their career, is to make it quickly. We need a deadline. We need to sit and write, because when you write things, it's like to bump something that makes you, your stomach feel not good. And then to be on the front stage and speak about it. Now, you don't have to be on the front stage and speak about your shame. You can speak about your dreams that you never did before, because who am I? Why people won't listen to me, read my book, hire me for my next position? I owe everything to the boss that I work with now, so maybe if I'll go to somewhere else. Or why do I have to quit my job as employee and start my own business? So in the front stage and in this 80 days, people write their dreams, their plans. They write action items. I force them really to buy their domain under their name in the internet, to open a website. Even if you are an employee, you can, you know, you have your agenda on the web, but you have to something that, you know, I can see and read about you and you can't cover it anymore. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we make all this process that they have a professional photographer, you know, and a makeup artist and a graphic designer and everything in this process. And then at the end, you have on your back your website, and you stand in minimum 30 people and you have to speak. And most of the people during this process, really, they can tell me, I make myself stupid, you know, in what position I'm going to lose my life, my career, my wife will leave me, my father will never forgive me.
Wow.
And all the cases, 100%, all the cases, and I'm doing it for 13 years with really, really important people. All the cases when the person that stand on the stage finish his speech, everybody comes and hug him. Why didn't you tell me, you stupid ass? Why didn't you share it with me until now? It suits you so much. I would never think about it. Why? That's what they have, a really huge hug, and everybody wants to help them. I have a makeup artist. She has an MBA and she's very professional and high position in an insurance company. And she wanted to be a makeup artist. That's what she wanted to be. She's 40 years old. She never spoke about it with anyone, even not with her mom, because her mom always told her, if you want to have a good man, to get married to a good man, if you have, you want to have a really good friends and high class, and you have to be really successful. And to be successful, you have to go to the university, learn, study business, and then to be in a good position. And she carried this bag with her. Even when she go to the kitchen, she has to make the perfect chocolate cake, everything, because if not, no one will love her. So when I met her the first time, she said to me that she needed to build a lecture for the professional convention. And we started walking, and I told her, tell me, her name is Ronit. I told her, you look so bored. Give me some details that we can make this lecture, you know, alive a little bit. You need people to listen to you. What? She said, because I'm bored. I can't stand what I do. So I said to her, what do you want to do? She said, I want to be a makeup artist. She said, I'm looking at you and I want to take from my bag my personal items and to fix your eyes and to teach you things. I said to her, oh, first of all, thank you for speaking about makeup, because suddenly I can see light on your face and I can see that you have, you know, a soul inside. And second, what is the problem? And she said, I can't do that. I have mortgage. And, you know, I'm really, really respectable in my industry and I can't do that. I'm 40 years old. I'm not 20. I can't start at all. Sit here, you know what? Don't quit your job. Just go and take a course, workshop, something. Just, you know. And she go and she took a workshop. And then I said to her, okay, so you study. So buy some professional stuff and let's start, you know, make photos. Let's bring some models and, you know, step by step, very gentle step. And then to make the long story short, after 80 days, she had this lounge, her business lounge in her apartment with her husband and her mother-in-law. She was afraid from her mother-in-law the most, I don't know why. And had her boss and her financial manager, and she stood in, and everybody in the head said to her, why did you wait so long? It suits you like, I don't know, it's like you've been born for this. And now she's one of the successful makeup artists in the TV industry, yes.
Wow.
And, you know, you always think that maybe you respect people and that's the reason you have to wait with your dreams. But I think that you don't really respect them. Because if you respect people and you think that they love you and you trust them, so you can be you. So what I suggest to people, you know, when I have lectures or workshops with a lot of people around, so they ask me, okay, where I have to start from? And I always say, make a list, the people around you that will be really happy to see you free, to see you happy and successful and strange and even ridiculous a little bit, and make on the other side the people that you don't think that will be happy with you. So sometimes on this list you can find a brother or a really good friend or someone from the family, and I don't want people, you know, to turn them. So I just tell them, if you can, you know, if it's friend or someone from work or a neighbor, so set them free, okay? They need to work on their life. But if it's someone from family, just shut them down only for the process. Because if they are from your family, they love you. And when you finish the process and you start live your life, they will follow you. You will make something good even for them. They will follow you. Yeah. Just shut them down only for those 80 days mm-hmm. with yourself.
It's hard to do that because one of my friends, we just spoke about this a few days ago, he moved here from a different country. And especially now that
here now
the war,
during
yes.
the war, wow.
No, he lives here for a year, mm-hmm. over a year already. But especially now, mm-hmm. his family doesn't understand it really. He has a very good, easy life where he's from. But especially now, they don't understand it. Like, why are you staying here when the country is in a war? And
it's a different situation because it's not that everything here is okay and he's happy here. And they say to him, what did you do to your life? It's like, we are in the middle of a big crisis and we don't know when it's going to be end. You know, it's like some people say that it's going to take 3 years. I don't know. So maybe they have a good point here. I don't know.
Yes, you're right. I mentioned it though because for me, it represents following your heart instead of what is the right thing to do, you know, in parentheses. And
when you say the right thing to do mm-hmm. and what's right for me, when you separate between those two, it's not acceptable. You understand that? When you say what's right to do, it's what's right for others that I will do.
Yes.
Why should you care?
Yes, because there is this kind of conception in the
that
world.
That fell apart in the world, yeah.
Yes, that like you have to act in a certain way. There's a proper way to be. There is what the right job is, the right partner, the right place to be, the right way to look. You know, there is like this thing that's the right way, and then everything that's other than that is the wrong way.
Do you know that feeling that you go to a party and there are a lot of beautiful people and, you know, they smell like success?
In LA, I know a lot
and
of them.
Yes, I know that you know a lot of them. And you sit, you know, in a corner and you look at them and you say, when they go home, how do they feel? How do they feel? Do you recognize that feeling that you're like observer?
Yes.
So you can take your life. For me, it's to put it in the garbage and say, it doesn't matter what I want and who am I and what is it in me that want to, you know, to raise its head. And I will live other people's life. And for that reason, the result is that I will have more money, more friends. My house will be the most beautiful in the entire neighborhood. They will write about me great things. And at the end of the road, when I will be 60, 70, 80, I will release myself because I will have kids, I will have my career, I will have my position. What people don't understand is that during those years, you became to be someone else.
Mm. Wow. And then it's not possible anymore.
It's not possible anymore. You lose yourself. Yeah. So I think that it's better to feel comfortable with your talent, even if it's a different talent or smaller than other people think, and even if it's not so beautiful, aesthetic, shining, you know, because when we came to be 30, you shine with nothing. If you live this way, you became to be really something that everybody wants to follow. Everybody wants to go after you. What do you eat? What do you use on your face?
Yeah.
Who are you? What secret you have that I don't have? And that man can go out from a Mercedes, you know, with a great watch, and you can be on your bicycle. That's it. And he'll ask you, who are you? Mm-hmm. I want that life.
100%. What you're speaking about is something that I've been thinking about a lot. And I've also noticed it in my own life, how when I am, you know, trying to hold up a certain image, the amount of the feedback that I get and also the depth of connection that I have with the people, as opposed to when I'm completely free in like my weird way, you know,
maybe everybody wants loud. To be around you.
Yes, like joking around all the time. I feel the depth of the connection is so much deeper and we become like magnetic in a way.
Yeah.
So maybe how does one really allow themselves to be free? Because I think that also people who love themselves and do value themselves could be caught up in holding themselves back from really being their full self.
I, for example, you know, I work with this material, this sensitive material for 13 years. And when you called and said that you want to make an podcast with me for your community, I asked you in Hebrew, yes? And you said, no, it's in English. So at the first minute, I wanted to tell you, no way, my English is terrible. I have to polish it. And I said to myself, okay, act as if your client called you and said to you that they want to make an interview with him in English. What would you say? So I said to myself, I would say to him, say yes and work on it. So that's what I did. I told you, okay, no problem. And we opened our, you know, schedule and made this appointment. And even yesterday, when I started reading my materials, I have a lot of materials in English because I translated my books, two of them. I translated to English, one of them also to Arabic. Wow. I thought we will have peace and yeah. And
we will.
Yes, amen. And as you know, I made a relocation to Los Angeles to develop my series about shame. My first book called Chshuma, like the disease, the enigmatic word. Even though people told me no one in America will understand what Chshuma is, they will not know how to say it. And I said to them, okay, Fauda is the same thing. No one knows what is that. And they was really afraid. I know someone from one of the producers. So he said, they will call it Fauda. So it will be the same as Chshuma, but I'm not going to lose it because it's a really special and defining word. Mm-hmm. And I worked there on my English and I worked there on my lecture that, you know, it's a big hit here in Israel. You know, so many people heard it. And when I came there and people asked me to make a lecture in English, I froze to death. I said to myself, I can't do that. I can't do that. And with you, and I didn't. And I'm Shame Mentor, okay? So I don't think that we have to continue working all the time, even when you think that you are, you know, beyond this and you feel strong, it's always raise its head because you have it from the day you were born. you can't lose it, you know, with a psychologist and with a therapist or reading books or even to work with this like I do, like I did all these years. But with you now, I'm having kind of a treatment. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to tell you something, and people will find themselves in this too, because I'm in the middle of a process. I'm giving you everything I know. You ask questions, I ask you, but in my head always runs something like, if I don't sound good, I hope she will bury this podcast chapter, and I don't want no. And so you ask if you can really heal from this, not completely, but you can feel comfortable with it. Mm. Because if I knew all this about myself back then in 2006, 7, 8, 10, after I lost only 2 million, okay? 3 million, okay? And I could say to myself, you're not closing it, not because you think that the audience will be ready for your product. You're not closing it only because you feel ashamed. Maybe it would take more time, but at least I could know and understand and support myself with that feeling. You understand? That's what people have to understand, because if you start something new and you feel like anxiety and you say to yourself, I can't do that, please stop everything. Take a note and write the reason that you feel not comfortable with this next step, with this thought, with this idea, mm-hmm. okay? Just write, and you will see that the shame will come, you know, if not in the first answer, the second, the third, it will come up, it will arise its head. And then you can stop and say, okay, I can deal with it. Let's make the next step. Don't stop when you feel like I felt the day you called, and I said to myself, no, I can't make interview in English. I'm not ready for this. Mm-hmm. Now, at this moment, I make the progress.
Yes, 100%. So it's interesting that you said, like, taking a paper and putting it from your head on the paper and then looking at it, right?
We have, until now, three actions. The first one, put a deadline and start working with someone on your speech, lecture, business development, your website, your photos, everything. And it's not, it doesn't, even if you don't want to, you know, open your own business, you don't want to make a big change, even just to say your own truth about how to raise kids properly, how I can't stand the way that our garden looks and I want to change it. Even small things, we don't need, you know, heroic things, yeah. Small things. This is the first thing you need to do. Deadline, work with someone, have a speech in front of people. After this event, you can see yourself even if in school when they want, you know, parents to come and say something. You'll feel more comfortable in the meeting room. You know, people don't raise their hand to give their opinion about something only because. So after this, you liberate yourself from a lot of boundaries in other areas in your life. The second thing is to write those people that will support you, mm-hmm. and will walk with you with the change or the ridiculous idea that you're gonna achieve. And the other list that if you love those people and they're your friend, just shut them down, don't kill them. And the third thing is to write every time you have anxiety, every time you want to stop something. And you know, we are very sophisticated. Our brain is really, he knows how to make it up. So if you start to do something and you say to yourself, oh, I have laundry, you must understand that it's because you're afraid to do the thing that you're doing right now. Or you want to go to talk with your friend. Oh my God, I didn't call her back. So she will feel so. No, it's nothing but stopping you from doing something that maybe will bring criticism and shame and, you know. So this is the third.
I heard somebody say one time that, like, when we say, I don't know what to do, or when we want to do something, but we stop because we claim that we don't know how to do it or what to do, it's not that, it's actually that we're afraid to do it. And we're stopping ourselves with the excuse.
And we are not afraid just like that. I think that my definition, it's always, I think that it's all about shame. Because you're afraid only when you think that someone else will see it. If you want to do something in your house and no one, you will never be afraid, like a kid.
Exactly.
Mama. So it's always comes with, other people will look at us and maybe we'll have criticism. I heard Bill Clinton said once, Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton, she said, criticism, take it professionally, not personally. Mm. And most of us take it personally. That's why we freeze and we don't do the next step.
And we are so governed by this. We actually live our lives, our own personal lives, the lives that only we experience.
Yeah.
We live it according to not even what people want us, but what we think people want us to
do. Usually they don't care what we do. They don't care. They have their own problems. Yes. Michel Foucault is a great philosopher, French one. He said, let me see if I can say it. In his words, he said that we all have our supervisors, architecture firms. Everybody build. So one can have his architect supervisors from the army, from neighborhood, from childhood, from family, from his wife and parents. From everybody build his own firm. And he worked with them. Now, the ridiculous thing is that you obey someone that has his own firm, that he has to obey them. So why? We are all living in a cage for no reason.
Yeah.
I always say to people, you know, when I want to make it like to let people feel comfortable with themselves, so I say, stay humble. Nobody cares about you. This is the...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, you know, not caring what other people think and not letting that stop us. But in a way, it's healthy to care a little bit what other people think. And also, I feel like, especially now, what's happening with Israel and the world, we see how much of an effect the public image or what people around the world think of us actually matters.
Yes. So for this, with our big issues and for what you have on your table, it's very simple. You just, if you want to know if it's okay to think what other people think before you think or feel, before you think about yourself, you just have to write, always writing. Writing is like, yes, it helps for everything, I think. And just write, if you do something to harm someone else, if you do it in purpose to make someone else to feel bad, if the answer is yes, stop it. Even if you can earn from the next step a lot, like, you know, sometimes when you want to open a business that your brother have, let's say falafel store, okay, here in Tel Aviv, there is a successful one and his brother-in-law wants to open another one. So he has to ask him to himself, I'm not doing this because I don't want my family will say about me that I'm not honest and I'm doing such a damage to my brother-in-law. Or maybe it will really harm his business. Maybe it really will take clients, and we both, so the reason is, of course, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Don't be a lunatic. Don't do that. But if you're going to make the same thing in Paris, for example, mm-hmm. he can help you. It will be okay. You can understand that I'm not giving my examples just, you know, out of my real stories.
Okay.
And about our country and about what other people say around the world, the question we have to ask ourselves is, did we started it? What do you want more, peace or these evil things that we have? So the answer is so obvious. So you can't have, you know, you can't have everyone to understand your interest. And you have to go to your goal and do whatever it takes.
For us, it's obvious because we live here and we know the story. We know the facts of the situation. But right now we're dealing with a huge case of misinformation being spread. So how do we deal with that? Because there is the truth and then there is lies and things that are not true and things that are twisted. And I feel like once the lies are out there, it's like it doesn't matter already if what's
it's bigger
the truth.
Than the truth. Yes. Yes, it doesn't matter what the truth is. Yes, I heard Angelina Jolie said today that we have to stop fire because a lot of Palestinian, you know, innocent Palestinian dies. And I say to myself, she don't know nothing. Someone have to sit and speak with her because the next day it's in her home. And I think that Europe is with us because they understand that tomorrow it's in their home.
Tomorrow.
So, yeah, even I think yeah. it started. So sometimes you need to give, you know, the truth to make its job. You can't deal with everyone, especially now, you know, they have milliards of people, billiards, and we are only 14 million. It's like, it's nothing.
0.2% of the world.
Yes. Point two. So how can you win this? You can't. You just have to do the right thing for you. And the world, I believe, will follow. They will see the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think they can see it every day in the news. Because I wanted, you know, someone to ask Angelina Jolie, do you know about women's rights in Gaza, in Iran, in what are you
they
fighting for? They don't exist. They kill women if she wants to, you know, a divorce from her husband. If she speak with someone, if she go out without her, they kill her for the name of, you know, the family
honor.
And the honor. And what are you talking about? It's like, I look at those people and I say to myself, they don't read. They can't watch a documentary movies. They can't speak with people. And you know, the most surprising, I don't know how to say it in another world, in Cambridge, Harvard, Columbia University, Princeton, UCLA, you see professors that don't, you know, raise their voice and say, stop it, we can't support them. How come? But what can you do?
Well, what do you think? What do you think it is? Because I think a lot of people see the images from what's happening in Gaza and they are horrified by it, as am I, by the way. I cannot believe this is actually happening and really, really close to here. And to people that I consider my brothers, like we know in Israel, we always call people who are Arab, we call them cousins.
Yes, Ben Dod.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
They're our cousins.
I have, you know, I don't know how honest can I be in front of a camera, but you know, usually we work together. I have Muslim clients.
Of course, in Israel we live together.
Yes, my handyman is and I don't know if I don't know if I can say these words, because I say to myself, if that man that I work with, a Muslim one, very healthy, very rich and successful, why doesn't he call me and ask me, how do you feel? I support you. How come? So who can you trust? So you ask me about, you know, my... I know how to build images. I know how to work on reputation. I have an agency that's called Business Talent. I know how to do that. And a lot of people call me and say, what do you think we have to do? And I always say, I give them the same answer. Go with your truth, tell your story, and that's it. We cannot fight them. They are huge. We cannot. And the truth will come up. I think that everybody will understand who is the good side in this war. Terrible, horrible war.
I think that's a beautiful message. And I feel that in my heart, that it's so true, because again, bringing it back to like personal lives, even people outside of the country, it's always like this. You can't spend your energy arguing with the people that don't agree with you. You have to spend your energy on building your truth and following your truth.
This is a beautiful ending, because it comes with a with the government, it comes with our IDF, it comes with your company, your small business, your family, and between you and yourself. Don't try to convince no one about your truth. Do it the right way. Be honest. Be good person. Make it from the great reasons, and everything will be okay.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. That's so true. Okay, so just to end the conversation, I always end with the same question. Sigal, what are you curious about right now?
Oh, it's a great question. Curiosity is the engine of the world, I think. It's the generator of the world. I'm researching a new thing that, you know, I'm only in the first steps, about the new generation of psychology. I think we've had enough the traditional one that focusing on me and the world. Mm-hmm. And focusing about what your parents did to you in your childhood and how it reflects your life and your future. And I'm trying to focusing on a Jewish psychology that speaks about find a good reason, find a good goal. Try to see how helping other people impact your own life and heal you from your problems. That's what I'm curious about. I read a lot and I listen to lectures and a lot of mentors from all over the world. We have a lot of great Jewish people that speaks about it. And I think that this is the thing that I will work on for the next 2 or 3 years.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Super, super interesting. I completely relate to that. We see, like in the world right now, we see, or you know what, specifically in Israel, the way yesterday I had a yoga event that we did for helping people just kind of relax and disconnect from the stressful situation that we're in. And this was the bottom line. Helping other people during this time is what made it possible for us to survive this horrible thing.
Yes. That's why you see so many volunteers around all, you know, we do everything. Yesterday, my laundry room became to be, you know, I make so many, so much for soldiers from the, we can say about the, no, we can't, for soldiers, girls. So I put a lot of perfume so they can feel good. And I felt so happy with myself, really. I didn't watch the news, and it's a great thing. Even yeah. if it's a small, tiny thing like laundry, you don't have to go and save the world.
Yes.
Small things, small things.
God is in the details.
Yeah. Mm. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. This was incredible, so interesting, and really, really useful.
Thank you.
Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.